Chip and Charge,
der Tennis-Podcast mit Andreas Thies
und Philipp Joubert auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Es dauert nicht mehr lange, bis in Flushing Meadows die ungewöhnlichsten US Open der Geschichte beginnen. In einer Bubble, ohne Qualifikation, mit reduzierten Doppelfeldern, ohne Zuschauer. 6 der Top 10 bei den Damen haben abgesagt. Viele Spielerinnen und Spieler verbleiben in Europa oder bei sich zu Hause, wo sie weiter trainieren. Corona wirbelt das eigentlich letzte Grand Slam des Jahres gehörig durcheinander. Was sich nicht ändert für uns Zuschauer, die Art der Übertragung der US Open. Eurosport überträgt alle Matches im TV oder im Eurosport Player. Einer, der jetzt schon seit 2006 einer der Eurosport-Experten ist, ist Mats Wielander. Mats Wielander war Ende des Jahres 1988 Nummer 1 der Weltrangliste. 88 gewann er die Australian Open, die French Open und die US Open. Es war sein bestes Jahr. Nur in Wimbledon erreichte er nur, in Anführungsstrichen, das Viertelfinale. Verlor damals gegen Miroslav Mecir. Im Davis-Cup-Finale unterlag er mit dem schwedischen Team damals Deutschland. Wielander hat auch nach seiner aktiven Profikarriere weiter Tennis gespielt, unter anderem auf der Champions Tour. Seit 2006 ist er aber am bekanntesten für seinen TV-Job als Experte bei Eurosport. So ist er während der Grand Slams in Melbourne, Paris und New York an der Seite von Barbara Schett im täglichen Format Game Schett and Mats zu sehen. Diesen Job wird er auch in den nächsten 2 Wochen während der US Open ausfüllen. Ich hatte für Chip and Charge die Möglichkeit zu einem Interview mit Mats Wielander. Wir sprechen über die Corona-Pause, wie er als Aktiver wohl mit Corona klargekommen wäre und wen er in der Favoritenrolle bei den US Open sieht. Viel Spaß mit dem Interview. Thank you for taking time to speak with me. First of all, happy belated birthday. It was your birthday a couple of days ago. ATP and ITF remembered your biggest successes on social media. If you could choose one title or match, which one do you enjoy the most looking back at then?
If I had one title, I would say the US Open. You mean for me?
Yeah, for you. Yeah.
I'm not sure. US Open in 1988 or the Davis Cup final in Munich in 1985.
The Davis Cup final in Munich 1985 was the first year I watched tennis, so I still remember that weekend. We have been living with COVID-19 since the beginning of the year. The tours have since returned. We had the lockdown from March. How do you experience the first couple of weeks on tour with ATP, WTA, with the new measurements, especially within the bubble and how they are applied in New York?
I think it looks great. I mean, looks great. I think the players look great. I think the players look they look extremely excited to play. So far, I haven't been able to see that somebody is not as fit as they were before. So it seemed like the break was long enough. There was a break, of course, and then I think players have been given, they've had enough time to get their games and their bodies back in top shape, most probably in better shape than they have been maybe in their whole career. So I think the one thing they don't have is confidence, because confidence comes with winning matches, not by practicing. But I think they're ready, and I really like the attitude of players. I like the attitude that I cannot tell the difference between the matches I've seen so far from the tournament in Cincinnati, from New York. The matches I've seen, I could not tell the difference between the body language of the players compared to before.
Yeah, it's definitely
very positive.
Yeah, it's definitely a high standard we've seen so far in Cincinnati. What if the world would have lived through a pandemic like today at the end of the 80s, your prime tennis years? How would a young Mats Wielander in his mid-20s handle the situation, the last 6 months?
I have no idea. I would have thought that I would not have started playing the US Open, maybe. Tennis is a much bigger business today, for not just for the players, but for the amateur side of tennis. So I think the players today feel a bigger, much bigger responsibility to the sport, to their job, to their teams, to amateur tennis, to their foundations that they have, that they raise money through tennis. So I think we didn't feel like that in the 80s for sure. So I think that we are, we're in a very good professional situation in tennis today, because these guys, they really are, first of all, dying to compete, dying to start working again, and dying to push tennis to the next level in terms of popularity. So I think that I have no idea if I would have played the US Open in the 80s, but I think seeing Bjorn Borg walk away at 25 and John McEnroe taking a year off in 1986, I would say maybe not. Maybe we would have said, you know what, let's hope the world solved this problem before we start playing tennis again, which is not a life and death situation. But I think today it's not a life and death situation, but it does make a huge difference for some of these players' foundations where there is a life and death situation in sort of Novak's and Rafa's and Serena's foundations.
Yeah. Let's talk about the upcoming US Open, starting with the women. We will start the US Open on Monday. Six out of the top 10 have already canceled the tournament. Two other top 10 players have lost their first round at the preparation tournament at the Western and Southern Open, which is played in New York. Are we going to experience the most open women tournament of all times, especially considering that results at women's tennis were hard to predict anywhere recently?
I would say that we... First of all, I think that it's very important to, I think, point out that the women's tournaments in the last sort of few, maybe 3 years, have been very unpredictable, very difficult to pick, except when Serena is playing, we kind of expect her to either win or get far. And she has actually proven that she is going to get far and made quite a few finals since she became a mother. So she's lived up to the expectations. Some of the other players have not, maybe, but so it's been a very open women's last 3 years. And yes, more open now than ever, but at the same time, playing 2 out of 3 sets for a woman is such a huge difference in terms of your nerves compared to a man playing 3 out of 5. We're talking about a sprint where if you don't get a good start, you can be down a set in the break in 45 minutes and be out of the tournament in less than an hour, and you haven't even felt like you started. That doesn't happen on the men's side. So it's tougher for women, first of all. I think that in the women's game is much more of a confidence game because the men can hold serve much easier, and they can get to a tiebreaker or 4-all, 5-all in a set by holding serve, and then they can get a bit lucky. On the women's side, because the serve is not a massive weapon for most women, they have to fight and play every single point on their service games, in their opponent's service games. And if you have a little bit of lack of confidence and a little bit of bad luck, then you can get stuck not winning matches. So I think the women's game is tougher for them to come back like this when they don't have that confidence of having won a bunch of matches before they play a tournament. I think it's much easier for the men because serve being a weapon.
How do you like Serena's chances? She's dying to get this number 24, the 24th Grand Slam.
I don't know if I like her chances. I think that the pressure on her to win this tournament is so huge. Even though there's no people watching, I think the pressure that she has on herself and people around and media, whatever. I think the pressure is absolutely massive. Like, if she doesn't win this one, I'm not sure she will believe she can win the next one if all 10 out of top 10 players are playing. I would have a hard time thinking that if she makes the final, that's enough confidence for her to win the Australian Open or the French Open. So I think this is crucial for her 24th Grand Slam career. On the other hand, I think she's already supposed to be the greatest player of all time because she has won her 23 slams in the Open era. And that's 2 more than Steffi Graf. And I don't think you can compare with Margaret Court, even though she won 24. Some of them were while tennis was an amateur sport. So I think Serena is already the greatest female. Well, she's the greatest tennis player on paper of all time.
Yeah. Let's talk about the men's tennis. Let's talk about Novak Djokovic. In men's tennis, Djokovic will be relieved that the sport's back in the main headlines after being in a defensive position all summer. Does the road to victory just lead through him this year? Is he still the man to beat this year? He has to be.
I think I think if he survives the first three or four rounds, I think his confidence will get really, really high, and other players will start to kind of think, oh my God, he's back, he's the same, nothing changes. I think the first three or four rounds are important, that he doesn't spend too much energy, and that he keeps some energy, because there's some guys that are Dominic Thiem and Stefanos Tsitsipas and Felix Auger. There's some young players that are so ready to win a slam, and I think they are physical players these days. Then they can take it to Novak in a different way. I think every year that goes by, it's going to be tougher and tougher for Novak and Roger and Rafa. And I think with no people there, I think of course, Novak is maybe a slight favorite ahead of Dominic Thiem. But I think I would have said that anyway. Even if we didn't have a pandemic, I think I would have said that. Mm.
Dominic Thiem had made a huge step forward over the last 1.5 years, reaching the finals at the French and Australian Open. Alexander Zverev appeared to be on a good path in Melbourne also. How much further ahead is Dominic Thiem in his development compared to Alexander Zverev right now?
How much further has he gone?
How much further is he developed as a player?
I think he has figured out how he needs to play. I think the Dominic Thiem has figured out, this is how I need to play my tennis. Mm-hmm. I need to be this aggressive against the top, those three guys. I think he's figured out how to play against Novak and Roger and Rafa. And I think he's going to play like that against other players too. And I think he's a step ahead there compared to Zverev or Tsitsipas or Shapovalov. I think that they are still searching a little bit on how aggressive should I be, how much do I rely on my serve if my name is Sasha Zverev, Stefanos Tsitsipas, how much do I come to the net? Do I come all the time? Do I not come as much? Denis Shapovalov, do I risk everything all the time or do I play a little defense? I think Dominic Thiem has found his way. And he's gone from being a baseliner to somebody who plays a very aggressive all-court game. And he knows what he wants to do on a court. And I think that's the biggest difference. So I think Thiem is very close to being complete as a player, both physically but also tactically. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a little bit of a way to go for Zverev and Tsitsipas and all the other younger guys.
Last question. I got to ask for your tip. Who is going to win the US Open this year for the men and women?
You know, I'm very bad at guessing. So I'm assuming that, I think you would have to say that what we are dying to see is Serena Williams, can she do it? And can Novak Djokovic still win a slam with no people watching? I guess those are the two situations that we are maybe. I mean, I want to see new faces, trust me. So I'm not hoping for an old face to win. I'm hoping that a young player comes through, both in the women's and the men, because I think it's time that we have some new faces. But I guess more than anything, you'd be looking at Novak and Serena. If they can, they can still be the best player in the world, even there's no people watching.
Really looking forward to the US Open. Thank you for your time, Mats Wielander.
Pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Das war Mats Wielander. Am Montag beginnen die US Open, die ihr auf Eurosport, Eurosport 2 und im Eurosport Player verfolgen könnt. Wir von Chip and Charge werden die US Open auch so ausführlich wie möglich begleiten, entweder auf Twitter, Instagram oder Facebook, beziehungsweise mit unseren regelmäßigen Podcasts. Wenn euch gefällt, was wir machen, freuen wir uns über Bewertungen und Rezensionen auf iTunes. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Auf Wiederhören.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.
Chip and Charge. Der Tennis-Podcast mit Andreas Thies
und Philipp Joubert. Auf meinsportpodcast.de.